Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guest will be Robert Clancy, the author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul and his new book, Daily Downloads and Fortune Cookies from the Universe. And he'll be on in a little while with us. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news, and also share with you some things that you can sign on to become activists, and, of course, share my recipe with you. So anyway, let's get started. First, of course, we are 1 week after the Paris climate talks, and unlike the talks that happened in 2009 in Copenhagen, the Paris talks were much more productive, and they actually got, you know, I think there were over 160 countries represented, and they came away with an agreement that everyone is going to really work on this, and it hopefully will become a treaty and law. But for right now, we all need to keep up the pressure on our government to do the right thing. You know, one of the problems from the Copenhagen talks were the smaller nations versus the larger nations, the bigger polluter nations versus the smaller nations, and very often the smaller nations are the ones that are going to be more impacted by global warming, even sooner than the larger nations. But the smaller nations don't have the clout and the strength of the larger nations. So, and they also wanted to make the rules equal across the board, and, you know, meanwhile, large countries like the United States, China, we've been polluting for a really long time and are responsible for so much of the global warming taking place, and yet the smaller nations, you know, the islands, they are really seeing the catastrophes happening with weather changes much more than we are. However, we are as well, with all the droughts and the storms and the fires. It's just endless, and we really need to put an end to it. And I think it's finally hitting home to our leaders that they really need to take a stand and do something about this. And so we need everybody to stay politically active and to do what they can to help, you know, turn this around. So one thing you can do is I have a petition on my website for the Environmental Protection Agency to put pressure on them to do the right thing and make the Clean Power Plan a strong agreement and hold them accountable to this new treaty. And so we need everybody on board to make that happen. We also want to have transparency in the foods we eat, and I know you all have heard me talk about the DARK Act, the bill that's already passed through the House and is now in the Senate, and we want to stop that in its tracks. We do not want there to be a law that would make it illegal for states to have their own labeling laws and require mandatory labeling of genetically modified organisms. And that's what this bill is going to do. This bill would make it illegal for states to have their own laws regarding that. And Monsanto has, you know, so many connections in our government, along with the other biotech and food manufacturers, and we really need to let our voices be heard. So please sign that petition as well. What else is going on? Well, those are the two petitions that I have up right now. In and around the city, you know, as we enter into winter, I mean, the amount of events goes down dramatically when you're dealing with the environment and food and farming and things like that. But there still are quite a few things going on that I want to share with you. December 30th, Michael Pollan has a new documentary that's coming out. It's going to be a free screening on PBS. That's on Wednesday, December 30th at 9 p.m. It's called In Defense of Food. And it's a documentary based on his book. And Food Inc. was also, you know, based on his book, and it was an amazing documentary, and I expect this one to be just as good. So if you can, tune in Wednesday, December 30th. I'm sure we'll all learn a lot from seeing this film, and it's all important stuff. January 22nd to the 24th is the New York NOFA Winter Conference. Every year it takes place up at Saratoga Springs in the Hilton. Registration deadline, you still have time, it's not until January 16th. The full conference is $270, but you can go for one day or 2 days, you don't have to go for the whole thing. But there's a lineup, you can see the schedule up online and decide what programs you really want to go to. But it's a great event. It's a really nice social time. There's always a contra dance and some music going on. They usually have some films showing as well. So if you can make it to that, I'm certainly going to try to go. It's a wonderful thing. Slow Food is having their Slow Wine Tour coming up at the beginning of the year. And February 2nd and 3rd, they will be in New York. I'm actually not sure where they will be yet, so stay tuned, and I will let you know as soon as I know. But they are hitting the big cities, Tokyo, Hong Kong, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and they'll be in New York on February 2nd and 3rd. The Long Island Regional Seed Consortium is having a free seed swap February 13th, so mark your calendars for that and save that. It's a great time to meet with other farmers and gardeners and swap seeds that we know are indigenous to Long Island and will work here in our area. And for those living in other areas, check your local areas, because seed swapping is really a wonderful thing to do. We know that plants work better when they are growing in an area that they are used to, and they adapt to our environment, and you're going to have a better crop if you use some local seeds. So that's a wonderful thing. And ours on Long Island will be February 13th. Stay tuned for where that will take place. A big seafood summer is going to be taking place February 16th to the 18th. And that is going to be down in Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia. I'll keep you posted on more information about that. And, of course, save the date, March 13th, for the Just Food Conference coming up, which this year will be up at the Teachers College at Columbia University. It's just one day, all day long, from 9 to 7, and their conference is always an amazing thing. Over 700 organizers, community leaders, CSA members all come together and put on a great event. So hopefully you can make that. So now I'm going to share with you my recipe. I thought it would be nice to do a dessert. So this is an apple cobbler crisp. It's vegan. It's also gluten-free by using gluten-free oats. That's the only thing. So you want to get gluten-free oats if gluten is an issue for you. Otherwise, any oats will work just fine. Another thing, I didn't have enough oats in my house, but I did have some puffed millet cereal, so I used that in replacement of the oats. If you don't have puffed millet cereal, you can, of course, use just more oats. Okay, so this is the recipe. It makes a big, a casserole for like 10 to 12 people. And I use 10 to 12 organic apples, and I usually use a variety, but I do always include some Granny Smith because of the tartness, and also they work really well in pies and baked goods. So make sure you have at least 3 Granny Smiths in there. Half a cup of honey, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of organic cornstarch, and 1 tablespoon of cinnamon. That's for the filling. Then the topping, you want 1 cup of flour, 1 cup of oats, and 1 cup of puffed millet, 1.5 cups of organic brown sugar, 2 teaspoons cinnamon, and 1 cup of safflower organic canola oil. And then for the filling, you're going to peel, core, and slice the apples and put them in a large mixing bowl. Dissolve 1 tablespoon of the cornstarch in a small bowl with the 1 tablespoon of lemon juice and pour that over the apples. Add the honey and the cinnamon and mix it all up well. Spray the bottom of a casserole pan. I use a nice ceramic oval pan. Just spray that with some oil, or wipe it with some oil. If you eat butter, you can certainly wipe it with some butter too. Then pour the apple mixture into the casserole dish. And then you're going to mix the topping ingredients. I use the same bowl because, of course, you've heard I like to minimize how many dirty bowls I do at one time. So once you empty the apples into the casserole, you can put all the ingredients for the topping into the dirty apple bowl, and it works just fine. Mix all those up, put them on top of the apples, and bake it at 375 for about 50 minutes. And you'll actually, you want to see the juices of the apple bubbling through the topping. Usually it's dripping over the edge of the casserole, because I pile the apples really high up because they will sink down as they cook. And that's it. It's delicious. Everybody will love it. It's, you know, relatively low calorie, and it's really great. It's a nice, clean dessert. So enjoy it. And now it's my pleasure to invite my guest on, Robert Clancy. His new book, Daily Downloads and Fortune Cookies from the Universe, is a continuation of his first book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul. And I'm going to let Robert tell you a little bit more of his inspiration behind the book as we get on. But he has a business that he's been running for 26 years called Spiral Design Studio. And his books are really all about volunteering. And his inspiration, you know, he had a spiritual experience that he's going to tell us about that just opened him up to volunteering. And as you know, that's something that I'm so passionate about. I always do Thanksgiving, Christmas, and I organize lots of people. Oh, and I didn't even talk about that. We'll have to take a break at some point and talk about my upcoming Christmas event, which is this coming week. Oh, actually, I'm going to take a break right now and tell you about it. So, Robert, just hold on 1 minute. Because I forgot to mention it, and I still am looking for more volunteers. We are cooking all day Monday and serving on Tuesday at Rufus King Park. We feed about 1,000 people, 600 people in the park, and we make enough food for the River Fund New York, the food pantry that I coordinate this with, to take food to other local shelters. So the menu is baked ziti, Caesar salad, garlic bread, brownies, apple pie, and lots of love, lots of Christmas presents. I also do a coat collection and blankets, so if anybody has some of those that you can drop off at IE Green. And also started last year a collection of lightly used jewelry. Actually, it doesn't have to be lightly used. It just has to be beautiful jewelry that you are no longer wearing that is sitting in your jewelry box getting dusty. We ask you to dust it off, put it in a gift box, and drop that off as well. And they make beautiful gifts for many of our teenage girls or young moms. So please donate that as well. Okay, going back to my guest. So I'm going to just invite Robert on right now. Robert, you with me?
I am here, and it's a true pleasure to be on here with you today.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I couldn't believe that I forgot to talk about my Christmas
event.
That's okay. Event.
You know, I'll always take a minute if somebody's going to share some volunteerism, so it's all right.
Good, good. So can you share with us, just start us off, how did you get started on volunteering? What was your inspiration?
I think it's just been a lifelong pathway for me, and I think everybody has, you know, this path in life, and mine... My inspiration came from my parents. My dad was the ultimate volunteer. He signed up, I think, when he was like 17 and a half and went into World War II. And he was actually on Omaha Beach during the D-Day invasion. Ended up liberating concentration camps while he was there. He was a frontline combat medic, so you can only imagine what he went through in his volunteer work with that. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a beautician. And... you know, it wasn't until she passed away that I truly understood everything that she did with her life, because so many people came up to me and said, you know, your mother made me look beautiful, but more so, she always made me feel beautiful, and it was her smile. And she had an infectious smile, like every picture I found of her. So the journey came from that, and I had an experience at age 6 in Jamaica where I ended up... meeting this man, he was probably about 18 or 20, and he basically saved my life 3 times on that, you know, he taught me how to swim, and I had fallen in the pool later, so I probably would have drowned because there wasn't anybody around the pool. And later he actually prevented a Portuguese man-of-war jellyfish from stinging me. It actually stung him. And then he took me to his village, and there I met all these kids, and they were... happy, you know, everybody was happy there, but they didn't have much, you know, all their clothes were tattered, and there were, like, just mud huts and things like that. And I ended up donating all my clothes to him at the end of this. You know, I asked my parents at age six to give all of the clothes, other than what I flew home with on my back, to give to the kids in that village.
Mm. And since then, you've been out to help others.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just been in my DNA, I think, you know, it got transferred along. And as you say, you know, the things that you're doing out there are amazing, and it's proof that one person can make a difference. You know, you have Long Island Cares and some of the other groups that you partner
Island
with.
Island Harvest, yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen some of the things where you've served to homeless people, to inspiring other people to do that, and that's just a beautiful soul right there, and I love what you're doing.
Thank you. You know, in your book, you talk about soul hitches. Would you call your experience at age six one of those soul hitches?
Absolutely, and you bring up a great point. I have coined a thing, you know, it's almost like I wanted to find out what a word to put for this, but it's when you meet those people in your life and you feel like you've known them forever. It could be just a chance encounter. It could be just a smile that somebody shared with you in like a car next to you or something. And it changes your perspective, but also it changes your view of everything around you. And, you know, you're kind of set in your way. Like, you know, you're going to wake up in the morning, you're going to have all these goals, and I'm going to hit this thing, and I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden you end up where you weren't. You might even get frustrated because you got taken off your path, but you end up where you're supposed to be. And these like guideposts, these people that you meet, and they can just steer you back onto a better path, and then you realize, you know, that's what I did need to do today, and it may be
right,
just a chance encounter.
Right, it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Right, I always feel that. You know, when you talk about that, I remember, you know, really being sad when all of a sudden we no longer had to, you know, pay the tolls in person. You know, now it was all automated, or you could put the money through the cash machine, or now we have Easy Pass. But I used to feel like when I'd go through a toll booth, just looking at the toll guy in the eye and smiling at him, you know, and having a little, that moment exchange made both of our days better, you know, and just those interactions, and we have so fewer of those interactions these days than we used to have. But those little moments of a complete stranger, just, you know, I even remember going through and sometimes saying, "No, I'm paying for the car behind me, just for the fun of it," you know.
Right.
And then the car would go up to pay, and they said,
"Oh,
it's been paid for." And you know, car would catch up to me and wave, and you know, it was just kind of it was always fun to do that kind of thing. Of course, that's when it was only a quarter at the toll.
But, and those are those moments exactly that I talk about in the book. It's these chance encounters. And I had one, and it's on New York State Thruway, so it kind of relates to what you have.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually in upstate New York, so I'm just south of Saratoga. I know you mentioned it in the opening there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm up here, and it's warm. It's good, but not good because I don't think we're supposed to be this warm.
Right,
but
I know. It's December.
On the Thruway, I drive to Long Island. My wife's from Bellport.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got to make this, you know, get through all the tolls and over the bridges and through New York City. And I'm rushing. I'm always like, we got to make time. And my wife has a bladder about the size of an acorn, I think. I don't know. But we got to stop, you know, multiple times. And I'm always like on a stopwatch almost. I'm on a timer. I'm like, come on. We got to get through here. And I'm going through the thruway, and I stop, and those doors are really heavy, those big metal doors, and you know, this woman, it was just like a sea of people, and this one woman stood out. She was coming toward the door just with this little quaint smile. She had leg braces and arm canes on, and she was probably maybe in her mid-20s, and she's just coming toward the door, and I blow past the door because I'm just like trying to direct my wife to where the bathroom is so we can get in and out, and I doubled back and opened the door up for her. And at this point, it was kind of like beyond the point where I should have opened the door when I first came through.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had that look on my face, and she kind of looked up at me with a little smile, and she just complimented me. She said, "That's a great shirt," and it was a Seinfeld T-shirt, and she said, "I love that show." And we just had this little moment in between the doors where I was expecting her to say, "Thank you for holding the door for me," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead,
mm-hmm.
she complimented me. And when I dropped into a bench in the thruway stop, I thought, why am I rushing around all the time? what's it going to save? I'm missing all these little moments in life, and it's kind of like when you run through a museum with your eyes closed. You know, you're going to miss all these things. And so I try to pull it back and put it in second gear now. It's still tough because I'm a type A personality, but I do ease back and try to drink in what's around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk about that a lot, you know, just stopping to smell the flowers. You know, my mom had a stroke and passed away like a year later. But in that year, you know, there's lots of people said, oh, I would rather have died than have been, you know, she couldn't walk or talk for a year. But what she could do, which she hadn't done in the 70 years, well, I shouldn't say 70, I'm sure she did when she was a kid, but in the years that I knew her as my mom, you know, she never really stopped to love and appreciate how cute a squirrel is eating an acorn or a bird or, you know, things that we all just take for granted. And in that year that my mom couldn't do much else and was sitting in a wheelchair, she appreciated the things around her so much. I mean, you know, she was just observing and looking, and it was really actually quite beautiful to see the pleasure she got from, you know, little things the way a child would, you know? It was really
right. Kind
of nice in that way, too.
So, yeah, those are those silver linings, and that's what I talk about. And my mother, toward the end, she had gotten cancer, and I had a similar thing. And she then started getting dementia, and we weren't sure if she was going to remember who we were and those things. I know my sister was really worried about that. And what ended up happening is, she remembered all these beautiful stories of when we were kids and when she was a child, and she'd tell them over and over, and we'd always have to act like it was the first time we were hearing it. It could be the 50th time. And the silver lining is I know all those stories in my heart now and word for word because she told them so many times. It's like seeing the same movie over and over. You start learning the lines. Mm-hmm. And the other is that she forgot that she had cancer. So she ended up being happy. Before that, she was really worried, and I think it was really, you know, the stress on her body. It would probably would have, I think, having
killed
the dementia
her sooner.
Extended her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had that also with my father, you know, who had Alzheimer's by the end, and he also, you know, had lost his eyesight with glaucoma, so he wasn't very healthy at the end. But everything you tell him, he got happy all over again, as if he was hearing it for the first time. And so, you know, it was really easy to make him happy because you just tell him, you know, my daughter's engaged, and oh my God, he was in seventh heaven, you know. And so there are silver linings, as you talk about, and
yes. We
need to milk those and get the most out of them. Now, in your book, you also you came up with an acronym for the word love. Can you share that with us?
Sure, and you alluded to it in your opening about leadership, and that's what I have four letters for the word love. And for me, it's leadership, opportunity, volunteerism, and enthusiasm. And when you fill your heart with that love, life will mend itself. But if you fill your soul with that love, you'll be able to mend the hearts of others. So it kind of ties in, and I think there's always a component of leadership in anything that we do. And, you know, when you're leading people, you have to take them to someplace worthwhile. And for me, it's always ends with love.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yeah, it's great. And so how do you inspire others to do volunteerism?
That's a great question. I don't know if I do or not, but I started a Facebook page in December 1st, 2012, around that time, and I set a goal that day to write one inspirational thought, something, anything positive, and I was going to do it once a week, and then I thought, that's too easy because that's only 52, so I'm going to do it every day. Every morning when I wake up, before my feet hit the floor, I have to think of something, and believe it or not, I have not missed a day since December 1st, 2012. There's almost 300,000 people following the posts now, and it's from all over the world. And I just write about kindness, compassion, faith, peace, love, all of those things. And I just create something and just put it out there. And I don't know who they touch or how they touch people other than when they messaged me. And I had somebody message me once, actually two people on the same day, and they said, by the grace of God, I found your page today and read what you wrote because I was planning on committing suicide, and I'm still here.
Oh, my. So can you share with us what that inspiration was that day?
Yeah, it was when you're mired in the shadows of despair, know there's always a higher light source behind any darkness. You just have to turn around to see it.
Cool. Nice.
And yeah, most of my quotes, believe it or not, are memorized. I think I'm like a computer. I'm a very analytical, scientific person, you know, kind of on that side. And then I have this very developed spiritual side, so I guess when you combine those, I can memorize or somehow hold all these in my head.
Well, the book that you wrote, you published that, The Daily Downloads and Fortune Cookies from the Universe. But
yes.
Now, does that continue on your Facebook page?
Yes. Actually, that book contains the first 350 inspirational quotes that I wrote. Not all of them are on the Facebook page. There's also poems in there and other things that what I call are my downloads. I wake up and I feel like they're downloaded onto a hard drive on my head, and I just write it down and put it out there. But that is sort of it's in 9 categories to really help center yourself. And I think of them almost like little fortune cookies because you just can turn to a random page before you go to sleep and just read one of them and have, you know, a positive thought in your head before you go to sleep, and maybe read one in the morning before you start your day. And it's really about that, of just getting yourself into a gratitude mode, and that way you can, what I say is, if you bring your gratitude north of the latitude.
Yeah, well, there's also that saying, happiness doesn't come from being grateful, but when you're grateful, you can be happy. You know,
correct.
It's just, it's like, you know, being happy is not going to necessarily make you grateful, but if you're grateful, you have happiness. And
right.
I think that's really true. And you know what? On that note, why don't we take a couple minute break? And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul and some of your inspiration behind that. And then we'll go back into the daily downloads. Okay? Everyone
listening,
my guest is Robert Clancy from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul, and I'm Bhavani from IE Green, and I will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Paul Capotante, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, is all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Eutrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is Bobby Elias.
And it's Dr. Sarah Larson.
Hosts of Let's Create a Better World. Our show is for your body, mind, and soul. To have the latest, greatest cultural, creative information available.
Join us with our expert guests every Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific.
You can also hear our show on the phone at 619-550-0869.
And don't forget about the archives.
We're moving forward on PRN.FM.
And we want you to come with us.
Saturdays, don't forget. Every Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific. Let's create a better world.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
We are PRN. 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with my guest, Robert Clancy, author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Soul and Daily Downloads and Fortune Cookies from the Universe. And we're talking about his books and his inspirational ways of getting people to step up and volunteer. Hey, Robert, you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. So, I know you mentioned this earlier, and I know I read about it, but can you share with my listeners, you said you had a spiritual experience when you were 19. Can you share that with us?
Sure. It's something I actually kept a secret for pretty much the last 30 years. I only told a handful of people, and in fact, I told my dad the night that my mother passed away. And I shared this with him because they had been married for 64 years, and I couldn't imagine losing somebody that you've loved that long.
Mm.
So he needed to know. And at age 19, I had pretty much hit rock bottom. I was a straight-A student up to then. I had a great infrastructure of friends, and everybody went away to college. And my girlfriend had broken up with me. I lost a few close friends to suicide and then a couple others to horrific car accidents. And I was pretty much lost, and no one knew I was struggling. So I started mixing, like, prescription drugs and alcohol. I just was, you know, going through the day. I really didn't care about myself anymore or anything. I kind of lost touch with everything. But no one knew, you know, except this one woman in the restaurant I worked in. She was a waitress, and she gave me that thousand-yard stare and said, I know what you're doing to yourself, and you need to stop or you're going to end up killing yourself. And she was right. She then reached in her purse and took out this little booklet on how to meditate and put it in my hand and said, this has helped me through some difficult times. I need you to go home. I want you to do this tonight and just go home and stay out of the bars. So I did, and I was about 3 hours in. I read the instructions. They talked about the mind's eye and opening your soul up and everything, and I started my meditation, and I was about 3 hours in. And I know this sounds absolutely crazy, but there was a light that appeared in my mind, and then I opened my eyes and I saw it on the wall. So then I kind of looked at it and went, okay, well, I thought I was having a spiritual experience, but I guess not. But there was something different about the light, and I couldn't break the beam of it. I walked right over to it and waved my hand in front of it, and it was actually looked like it was coming from the wall. And it just kept getting brighter, and I sat on the edge of my bed, and then it just flashed, and it basically unfolded into an angel. And it came into my room. It was like a spiritual being, translucent, white, and the whole thing, exactly what you'd think, the wings, the tiara, the, you know, everything except for the, harp or something. Yeah, she had everything else, but I know what I saw, and it was there for almost an hour, and I think she kissed me, although I didn't feel anything physically. Her face and nose went nose to nose with me. I actually went cross-eyed, kind of looking at her, and backed up a little bit. And I think she healed me at that point. And, you know, at the end, she floated forward and touched me in my forehead with her index finger. And it was like being plugged into everything. And I just closed my eyes and let it happen. And then after she went back into the single point of light, and then it was gone. And I went to the mirror, and I actually talked to myself at age 19. I'm sitting there, and I said, dude, that just happened, and you're going to have to live with knowing the rest of your days that you're on this planet. And the sad thing is, no one is ever going to believe you. And I know I wasn't hallucinating. I wish I was, because I would have an explanation. I'm probably the most analytical person you could possibly meet. And I just went to bed smiling that night, and throughout my life, I would just try to guide people the best I could and do the best I could, because I know that every act of kindness truly does matter from that. That's what she revealed to me, and there were other things. And then on December 1st, that's when the quotes started, so I just started posting them online. And almost everything inspires me now. I mean, even fire extinguishers to plants to a smile on someone's face, it's just anything. And that's, you know, I decided, you know, when I told my dad a couple of years ago, I said, you know, I can't take this to the grave, and as much as I know people might think I'm crazy, I'm just going to have to tell the world and do what I can. And that's why, you know, I chose the path and started bringing career and calling together is really what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. So you started the downloads or the little inspirational nuggets after after you told your dad that.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's beautiful. I certainly believe that. You know, I know, you know, I do meditate, and I know other people that have had experiences like that, and I think so many of us wish for those kind of experiences if you haven't had something like that. But it's really, you know, it's heartening to know that, you know, we're not alone on this planet in that way, and that we are connected to our a higher energy, right? And that, you know, and that we're a part of a larger whole, and it takes everybody to do their part. And I think that's so often why I'm, like, you know, trying to encourage people to become active in some way, you know, and, you know, volunteering. I know you talk about, you know, can, like you said, just even opening a door for someone, you know, at little random acts of kindness is, you know, is in a sense, I mean, it's not really volunteering, but it's also doing those very important things. If we all did those more often, what a sweeter world we'd be living in, right?
Yeah, it's almost, I look at it this way. You know, I used to have that old model, you know, you'd go through life and then you'd end up at the pearly gates and they get a little scale out and they'd weigh in and go, hey, you know, you did good, you did some bad, okay, you're okay, we'll let you in. And my model's changed from that. It's like heaven is layered right on top of us, and it's there all the time. It's like love. It's like the air you breathe, and it's sad that so many people, you know, well, you can't see it. It's around you, and you need it, and they don't start thinking about it till you run out of it. And, you know, it's like a note. Like, you play a single act of kindness is like a note, and then it becomes a symphony in that side, whatever the other side is. It's like instantly becomes this beautiful music, or even beyond any kind of beautiful music. It's just something that plays endlessly and grows. And that's really, to me, you know, volunteerism starts within your soul. And what you do is, it's like green living for the soul, you know, if you think of it that way. And it's something that you can bring in, and it's just sharing a simple smile and brightening somebody's day. And I'm also a martial artist, so when we use pain compliance to remove a threat, and when you apply pain to somebody's body, the body retracts. And when people are in grief or in depression, you tend to retract away from that because that's painful and you don't want to be near it. And that's the exact opposite that you need to do. It's the person in the cube next to you where you work. Sometimes you'll sense, you'll know something's not right. And that's the time just to say, hey, you know, if you need to talk, I'm here. You know, whatever you're going through, or if you need something, just know that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be enough.
Right, right. So what would you say your definition of volunteerism is?
It is anything you do to ease someone else's life in any way that you can. So I look at it this way, that you need to spread it into your life and allow it to become part of your nature. it's almost as if you've learned a foreign language and you're always translating things. But once you become fluent in that language, it just becomes how your heart speaks. And that's really, volunteerism is all of those things. I know people say they're too busy to volunteer often, and there's always time. I mean, all of us have the same number of hours in a day. How come some people accomplish so much with those same number of hours? It's focus. It's how you make it part of your DNA, make it part of your life. And, in, you know, for me, I don't want it to take away from my family, so I include them in. Mm-hmm. My son's in Boy Scouts, so I volunteer because then I can spend more time with him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, with the cooking that I do for the people who are less fortunate, and I hate to call them homeless because so many of them are not homeless. They just live in a home with 20 other people, and
right.
You know, and the homes aren't very nice, and they really don't have a lot of money, and they're struggling. So they're not necessarily homeless, but they need the food enough that they're, or the coat enough that they're willing to stand online in the cold for 3 hours. So that qualifies, as far as I'm concerned, someone that's really in need. But I have realized that parents want to help, you want to have opportunities to show their children how you can volunteer and make somebody's life better. And so there's very few places that really allow children to come in to volunteer, at least in, you know, shelters and things like that where people usually go to look to volunteer. So even though the truth is when I have the kids here, very often it's more difficult because I have to find projects that they can do, you know, whether it's scrubbing the potatoes or, you know, I set up a crayon station and had them writing, making cards to put into the little toiletry bags that we were divvying up, you know, for them. So that, you know, so that the kids would have a purpose when they were here. But a lot of times it takes more work to have the kids here, but I think it's so important for the parents to be able to give that to their kids if they're wanting to give that to their kids. And so I continue to keep doing the cooking out of my home as opposed to, you know, if I go to a commercial place, then the kids wouldn't be allowed.
Right. Well, I brought, you know, my son to, since he's been really small, to food pantries to help sort the food out or sort boxes. And now that he's older, you know, he's 16 now, you know, he's been over there many times and just helping sort out things. And even the little, when we were, they were in Cub Scouts or that age, you know, like first grade, second grade, they still had things that the food pantry was had them set up for. So there's things you can do there for your community. Mm-hmm. If you want to get your, you know, roll up your sleeves and do something, that's always a need, as you know, with the work that you do and stocking these pantries. And then the, you know, I've cooked meals for people as well. Yeah, I brought, you know, a whole troop of Cub Scouts down, and we made lunch at one of the shelters for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things you can do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I know when people connect to different spiritual organizations, religious organizations, very often they have ways in which people can do volunteer work, and that's really nice. To take advantage of that, and they are great for organizing. But, you know, not everyone has that. And so, you know, I think I fill another place in that way. So do you recommend that everyone meditate? Do you think that that's an important thing in people's life?
Yes. I mean, I would, just based on my experience with it. But I actually do mini meditations almost every night. So I'll just clear my mind and just rest for a second before I actually go to sleep and try to think of something positive, and I just clear my mind and just lay there quietly. But there's also guided meditations that you can do. If you go onto YouTube, there's many people that have created these. So if you need something to actually walk you through the process of how to do it. But I think that it definitely, for me, in my own experience, it helps center me for the day. I think it's a great way to alleviate stress. And, you know, since my experience, I've lived the last 30 years with very little worry, fear, or doubt. And I know that many people live a lot with those things. And if you can eliminate those from your life and just trust that there is a bigger plan, you know, and I one of the quotes that I got was, "We never see the beautiful plan that God God has laid out for us, because we're always standing upon the blueprint. So it kind of puts things in perspective.
Right. Or John Lennon's, you know, life is what happens while you're busy making plans.
Right.
Right? Yeah, well, you just don't know. And you know, like you touched on, you know, you never know why you're in a certain place at a certain time, and something might have messed up, and, you know, so you couldn't be on the plane that you were supposed to be on, but you realize, I mean, this just happened actually a few weeks ago to my daughter. She missed her plane. She was so bummed out, and they had to put her on another plane. She called me. She was hysterical crying from the airport, you know, all upset. And so they put her on the next plane. Anyway, that next plane, so instead of going straight direct from New York to L.A., she had to go from New York to San Francisco to L.A. Well, the plane that she would have been on had mechanical difficulties. She got into L.A. 2 hours before the plane she was supposed to be on got there, you know? And it was just like, see? There was a reason.
Was she on the same flight? I was actually coming out of Santa Barbara. I was out for an interview out there, and there was a mechanical thing with the auxiliary power. So I got on the plane. I was supposed to make the connection, and then it was like, nope, it left later than it should have. So now I'm stuck, because after you get on the plane, they don't let you off. And I see the plane as we land in Phoenix. My flight is taking off. So now I've got 12 hours in Phoenix Airport. And I went out of my mind pretty much, and I'm venting on Facebook. I'm like, oh, I hate this airline and all this stuff. And then somebody posted, there might be somebody on that red-eye flight that you need to speak with. And you know what? They were right. I sit down next to this beautiful woman, and she, you know, we get talking, and we exchange cards. Her card is Divine's Oracle. She's a preacher, teacher, poet of the spoken word. And she was working on some books but had no idea how to publish them, and I had all the information on how to publish inspirational books. So
isn't that
we
great?
Enjoyed our flight, and we talked all night.
Right. Exactly. You just have to stop and smell the roses and, you know, take a look around and see there's a reason that things happen certain ways, and very often we don't know why they happen or what the reason is. And sometimes you won't know for, you know, months or years later.
Right.
But, you know, you just have to, like you said, trust. I think that's a really important word that we all have to just, like, sit back a little bit and trust in the universe, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you incorporate this part of your life with the very mundane running of a company like you do? You're the co-founder of Spiral Design Studio, correct?
Yes.
So how do you weave them together?
We're a highly creative agency, so I work with some awesome, awesome creative talent here, and we just have fun all day long. I look at it this way. My wife and I founded the company, and you're often working more than you're home, and when you're home, most of the time you're sleeping, hopefully. So we try to make it almost like a home here. Work doesn't have to be necessarily mundane or in that space. And we also give back to the community. So there's a lot of things we do with pro bono work. We work with several nonprofits. I always had a view with my wife that if we take from the community, we should always put back into it. So we were able to help rebrand this beautiful space in our community. It's the Troy Music Hall. And this is a world-class theater that is acoustically designed. Musicians from all over the world know this place. And they were having some trouble, you know, with filling the seats. So we came in and rebranded the whole place and then helped them shape the program. And they're now selling out shows with top artists and having, you know, like the Indigo Girls were in there. It holds 1,500 seats. And, you know, people are paying premium ticket prices now and happy to do it because of the acts that are coming in. And we gave, you know, helped them put a whole new website together, help shape the program and everything. And it's something that we can do because we have that talent to be able to give back. And, you know, you just got to make pieces of that. So that's really how my work and career can cross over to the calling part of my life.
Mm-hmm. How many employees do you have?
We have 10.
10, uh-huh. And is volunteering a part of the DNA of your employees, would you say?
Yes. Tomorrow, my creative director and I are going over to a local high school, and we teach junior achievement. And junior achievement is teaches physical literacy, entrepreneurship, and marketing and other things to young people. So I've been in the classroom there teaching this class for 7 weeks. Each week I go in, the kids look forward to it, and then my creative director started going, what are you doing? What's this thing? So I go, why don't you just come with me? So, they get, in, and then there's a local church nearby, and I know that my staff went over and peeled food for the Thanksgiving dinner, and just, I think they were, it wasn't potatoes, I'm not sure what they were peeling, but they were doing a lot. I think it was squash, I think they were doing something with that. But, they definitely get their roll up their sleeves and get out there, and they're also involved in several of the different organizations in the region.
So you've actually managed to weave both parts of your life together, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And there's not a real separation.
No, there's not.
That's great, because I think that's also challenging for people, how they can weave it into their lives, And I'm talking about volunteering where you're actually, going out and doing something like you're talking about, whether you volunteer with the Boy Scouts or a soccer team or, of course, the random acts of kindness should be done all the time, all day long, wherever you are. Those don't take any time. They just take a thought. And that's, something wonderful to encourage people to do, because that, doesn't take any time. It's just a mindset. Really the things that you were saying before that do take time, and you always hear people saying that they don't have time to do it, and I think your response is just right on, that you make the time. There's a way. There is a way.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is I found if I just tie things into my passions, and if you do that, so let's say you're in, like your passion, you've already done it. So you're a perfect example, because you love cooking, and trust me, I want that apple dish that you talked about.
It's very easy to make, so you should just make it. So easy.
Yeah, I think I can handle that.
And that's
that
why
one.
I make it. Apple pie takes, a little bit more talent to, to get down a good pie crust.
Right.
Is an art. It took me a while of learning to make a good pie crust. But also, pie crust is so much more fattening, and it's so much better with butter, and very often we don't want to be eating butter.
Right.
So just take that away. And everyone loves the crumb toppings.
Yeah.
So it's just so much. You save that whole step. You can whip it together in 15 minutes easily, and it's just great to pull out a hot, warm apple pie for dinner. Maybe I'll make one tonight.
You just brought it together. A perfect balance between, what you're doing with your passion and then tying it into the community. And it's not work for you. It's what you enjoy doing. So I see it in the pictures on your website and your Facebook page. And, I don't see you not smiling in any of those pictures. So.
Right. I do love it. I do love it. And I also love just as much the relationships that I make and build and the exchanges I have with the people that are volunteering with me. I mean, those are, I meet so many different people from different walks of life that are coming through, and I do it all out of my home. So everyone's coming through my house and, I roll up the carpet in my living room and I bring in 8-foot tables for carving and laying out trays and whatever. And, my whole house becomes a part of the project. But it's wonderful. Yeah, it's really a nice thing to do with people. So what can people expect to come from you next? You have a new book in the works?
I do.
I heard.
My next book is, the working title is Soul Ciphers, Decoding a Life of Hope and Happiness. And I know I mentioned I'm an analytical person, but I'm also a programmer. So I look at it almost like we can reprogram ourselves and our souls for the happiness that we desire. And at the end of each of the inspirational stories, I have decodes, three of them with each chapter. And one of the decodes, let's say it's an inspirational story of somebody's journey to discover how to truly be happy. A decode might be, do you smile when you're alone? And how many people haven't thought about that? we often share a smile out, but you need to share a smile for yourself. And so these little decodes, because somebody, you know, once asked me, they're like, you're always happy. How do you do this? And so I started writing down all these little nuggets of my own wisdom, I guess. It's just my way of doing things. Hopefully somebody will get something out of that.
Mm-hmm. And what are you talking about when you mention, like, reverse climbs? What is that?
A reverse climb is, I had a journey in the Southwest, and it's a long story, but I'll tell you the shorter one. On the journey, I foolishly climbed into Bright Angel Trail. I thought, you know, Bright Angel, it's got angels in it. How bad can that be? So I start heading down this path. I didn't have enough water, and I realized, you know, halfway down that, you know, people lose their lives on this trail because you're heading into a desert and you'll dehydrate. And it was a sign that I came upon that said, warning, if you choose to pass this sign and you do not have 4 liters of water on your person, we will not be able to rescue you or recover your body for some time. U.S. Oh. Park and Rec Service. And then somebody wrote, have a nice day. And I turned around about a half hour after that. And a reverse climb is when you go down. It's easy to climb down. The climb actually starts when you turn around. So I went down into this thing like 5 hours. It took 10 hours to climb out. So think of being on a nasty staircase for 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And my thighs were burning, and I couldn't believe that I was so foolish to do this. So that night I thought, people do this with life. They take these exits, and sometimes they don't come back. And I thought about the people that had lost their lives on that trail. And how many people passed those people and didn't say, hey, you don't look so good. Do you have enough water? You know, maybe, you know, you need to rest here. Or let me see, you know, what I can mm-hmm. do to help you. Or that they just didn't reach out and say, I was stupid and went down here without enough supplies. I need help.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, good. Robert, this has been really delightful to have this conversation with you. And I'm sure many of my listeners would like to be able to connect. Can you share your contact info with them before we run out of time?
Sure. My website is guidetothesoul.com, and I'm also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/guidetothesoul, and my company is Spiral Design. It's spiraldesign.com. So those are all the places that you can connect.
Wonderful. Well, Robert, thanks so much for joining me. It's really been wonderful, and I am really thrilled to have met you, and the work you're doing out there is great, really good. We need more people doing that kind of work, and thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and I have a couple things that I'm doing up here that I want to connect with you on within some of the initiatives that you're doing. We're actually working with the Rensselaer County Farm for natural foods, so organic
foods. I will definitely connect with you.
Yeah.
And for now, everybody out there listening, it's been a pleasure being with you. I'll see you all again next week on Christmas Eve Day. So have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.